This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Heidenreich.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase, episode number 34. I'm joined here by another member of the three-time guest club on Wrestling Omakase, Mr. Andrew T. Rich of Music of the Mat, which will have a new episode that isn't up as I'm recording this, but will be up before any of you hear this.
Yes, it'll be up tomorrow as of this recording date, Tuesday.
So this will probably go up on Wednesday or Thursday. I haven't really decided yet. Yeah. But that's basically what you do, Mr. Andrew Rich. You're the Mr. Music of the Mat. Mr. Music on here at Voice of Wrestling.
Mr. Music. Yeah, I'm the music man. Yeah. But I also do various articles every once in a while. So look for my name on the site or the Twitter feed of
VOW. You've been on some of the New Japan previews with me, right? I feel like
I've done a few reviews here and there, but I usually stick to articles.
Not the prolific previewer that I am, right? I think I've done every single New Japan preview in like a year and a half or something.
Yeah. You're a real marathon man when it comes to that stuff.
I love the previews. I don't know why. It's really fun.
Yeah, they're good to, you know, give your opinions in short form.
Yeah, basically. It's the only article writing I really do, other than you. Well, you and I both do the bios in the New Japan ebook, right?
Yeah, we did. Rich and Joe.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's good to, you know, because oftentimes when you're trying to write stuff and you just lose interest, but just don't find a topic to do. It's a good way to, you know, write stuff and get your skills up to date and all that stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I did like all the LIJ people, which, you know, I'm sure people who know me weren't surprised by.
Yeah, but,
it was fun writing that ebook. I enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, it's fun to, you know, pick the guys who other people don't want, like Iizuka and.
I think I have my boy Taichi.
You did have Taichi and Taka and some other ones, but I had some heavy hitters too, like, you know, Tanahashi and. Beretta, he was a pretty fun one to write about. But, you know, just various things, you know, it's always good to, you know, vary up between the main event, your guys, and the lower card guys, just to, you know, stretch out.
So you were, like I said, you're a three-time returning guest. You had previously talked about New Japan the last two times.
The last time I was on, I made a pledge, or we made a pledge to the next time I was on, we would not talk about New Japan.
Yeah.
So here we are not talking about New Japan.
Yeah, because you had done, what, with like the Destruction shows review?
The first one was the G1 Climax Smorgasbord Megathon.
Oh, yeah, we did like
that. Yep. Kevin.
Yeah.
The next one was the three Destruction shows, which were blech, and the King of Pro Wrestling preview. And that was back in like September, late September.
Yeah. October. So we said we'd bring you on to talk about, like, you know, your beginnings as a wrestling fan, which is what we're going to do today. It's a very slow week, very slow weekend. There's nothing really going on. You know, there's, I know there's some stuff that's going to make air today, I think, that I have to look, I should actually look into, because I don't think I have yet today. Like, I think
there's
all
always
Japan,
something going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but the whole previous week, there was nothing. Like, if you look at the Samurai Air schedule, like, really, there was absolutely nothing. It was really one of the deadest weeks in a long time. So, but yeah, this week will be more exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, not going. Obviously, WWE doesn't have anything either. People better get ready for a lot less, like, WWE pay per views.
Oh yeah, There's Elimination Chamber this Sunday. Yeah. There's Fastlane in a few weeks. There's Mania, and then it's bye-bye. You know, split pay per views again. We're talking about, like, the history of WWE at a certain time period of when I started watching and all that stuff. Here we are. History is reliving itself, where split pay-per-views are going bye-bye again.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting, because obviously that period, you know, where the WWE had split pay-per-views, you know, I feel like when people were celebrating this, they didn't remember how crappy some of these split pay-per-views in this era were. But
there's some stinkers here. Yeah.
There's some really terrible ones, but, like, at the same time, like, the split pay-per-view era just kind of produced more, like, I don't know. There was more characters were able to.
I'll say this. It did give people more chances to shine, because when you split the rosters up and split the pay-per-views up, you can focus more on a group of people on one pay-per-view as opposed to an entire mass army of people on one pay-per-view. So you can theoretically give more time to shine if you do it right.
Now, look, like, last year, I think WWE had one of its worst years of all time, probably. Yeah. So, like, especially on pay-per-view. So maybe ending the split pay-per-view thing is, you know, it's probably going to produce some better cards here. But I don't know. Like, it's just, it's a very... I saw, like, a lot of takes, like, oh, anybody who's saying the split pay-per-views is the end of split pay-per-views means the end of the brand split. They kept it going for years after that. And it's they did, but that was also the beginning of it being severely watered down and being severely, you know, like, like, just when it stopped meaning as much when they're on the same fucking show every month. You know, it's just, it doesn't mean as much to have a fucking brand split. Like, I don't know what to tell people. And that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, it used to be, it felt special when Raw and SmackDown would come together. Like, you know, it's Rumble, Mania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. And that was it for a few years. That was the only time when these guys interacted with each other. And then it was, what was it? Backlash 07 was the first time when Raw, SmackDown, and ECW were on the same show together, and it wasn't one of the big four.
Yeah.
And from then on, it was eventually became, remember, what was it, the Raw Super Shows, where it was like Raw and SmackDown guys together. Yeah. So eventually it just dissipated and it lost its meaning completely until eventually it came back again. Now it's going to lose its meaning completely again.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I mean, I don't think it's not going to happen overnight. But
No. It was a slow change before. It'll probably be a slow trickle again now.
Yeah. But, like, the fact that we're way ahead of schedule as far as the brands that came back, and, like, they had single brand pay-per-views for, like, 4 years.
Yeah. A little under 4 years. I think it was June 03 to April 07, which is a little under 4 years.
Here,
this one was September 16 to April 18. So, like, less than 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. When they brought this thing back, I was skeptical speaking as a longtime fan, and I remain skeptical. But we'll see what happens. But
we'll see. We shall see.
I mean, the one thing is they have got to, like, fucking get rid of some of these titles if they're gonna.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, we're gonna have every month a Raw Women's Title match, a SmackDown Women's Title match, a Raw Tag Title match, Tag Title match.
Unless the show is 6 hours long, it's gonna be
a WWE title match, a Universal title match, a US title match, an IC title match. Like, I can keep going. The entire card could be title matches.
Keep going. And what does that mean? Like, no more non-title, you know, non-title feud matches on big shows? Because it's like.
I mean, already
some of those titles are going to have to get chopped down to the pre-show, I imagine.
Well, they already are.
That's true. Yeah, I mean,
which is like really fucking stupid. Like, what is the point of having a U.S. title if it's like the pre-show title?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like the second biggest title on SmackDown. Then, you know,
it's the pre-show title.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, but we're not really here to talk about current WWE. But it's interesting because
we get sucked in. Yeah.
Because it's
so
like
bad. It's so fun to talk about how bad it is, but.
But like there are a lot of parallels here to this period, and
there
it's fun to compare the two like brand split periods. Yeah. So where young Andrew Rich, because you are much younger than me, comes into professional wrestling, it is in, I believe you said June of 2003, right?
That's what
you
told me. July. July.
July. I was close.
We're close.
You caught like an episode of Velocity or something.
No. Let me tell it again. I've told
this
story before many a time on my podcast and on yours. So let me set the stage here. It is July 03. I am 10 years old, and I'm flipping around the TV one night, just bored out of my mind. And I come across what was then Spike TV, which is nowadays it's the Paramount Network. It just switched over to a new
name. So you said you're 8 years old?
I was 10 years old.
10 years old. I was going to say, eight is a little young to be letting them
hold on to the remote.
Clicker.
Yeah.
But 10, I guess, is acceptable.
10 years old. I'm 10 years old. I'm in my bedroom, and I come across Spike TV, and it is an episode of Monday Night Raw. And the match at the time was a guy in red tights versus a guy in blue tights. And, of course, since I am 10 years old and blue is my favorite color, I am naturally rooting for the guy in blue tights. My dad comes in, and he starts to watch it with me. And because my dad is savvier and older than me, he recognizes that the people in the crowd are cheering for the guy in red tights over the guy in blue tights, who they obviously are booing. And then over the course of the match, I slowly start to cheer more for the guy in the red tights, start to pick up on the appreciation the crowd has for the guy in the red tights. Little did I know that the match that I was watching was Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho in a WrestleMania 19 rematch. And I guess that was sort of building up, in a way, the match they would have as part of the SummerSlam match, which was the Elimination Chamber match. Funny enough, pay-per-view is coming up next. It was the World Heavyweight title. It was Triple H defending against Goldberg, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, and Kevin Nash. That was going to be the big match at SummerSlam for Raw. So that was my first foray into watching wrestling, Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho. Now, of course, I had known about wrestling beforehand. I knew who some wrestlers were, barely. I knew who The Rock was, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin. That was pretty much it, because I had seen The Mummy Returns. I had seen Scorpion King. I had seen various appearances that these wrestlers had in movies and TV. But as far as watching wrestling and being a wrestling fan, July 03, that episode of Raw was my first actual moment of being a fan of wrestling.
I got you. So you were watching. Were you only watching Raw, or did you keep watching?
It took a couple weeks before I recognized that there were more shows to watch. Like, it took a couple weeks before I started watching SmackDown. And then started watching it regularly. So after a couple of weeks, I started watching SmackDown, and then I would watch SmackDown Raw, and then from there on would be Heat and Velocity, which were, of course, the Sunday night and Saturday night, and the Sunday night shows and Saturday night shows.
See, I remember watching a lot of Velocity in this period because I was so I'm older than you. I was about 17 at this time.
Okay,
or maybe I just turned 17, so I was not a, as they say, cool teen. Right. So I was not going out a lot on Saturday nights. So, Velocity was on Saturday night. It's like, oh, well, if I'm bored, I can turn this thing on. But it lasted a long fucking time.
Yeah.
Like 02 to 05.
Yeah, and then moved over eventually to WWE.com.
And then it lasted another year.
At some point, like 05 or something, it moved to WWE.com. Same with Heat. And then it just went away. But it's funny you bring up Heat and Velocity. I did not realize that Heat and Velocity were taped on the day of Raw and SmackDown until like a few months in. So I always assumed that it was like live or something, which is funny because it's like Saturday night on like a 10 o'clock on Spike TV. Like, who was going to a wrestling show then in that arena at that time of night? But it took me a while to realize that, you know, Raw was live, but SmackDown, Heat, and Velocity were taped.
But yeah, so Velocity, I think I probably watched a lot of like Velocity in 03 and maybe into 04 when I kind of like stopped watching as much SmackDown. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that too, I guess, like what of each brand we were watching. So like at this point, I've already been a fan for quite a while.
Right.
You know, I had started watching in like really on my own in like 1996, although I'd gotten taken to WrestleMania 10. Mm-hmm. In like 1994 as an 8-year old, not really even understanding what was going on.
Right.
But yeah, I was pretty into WWE at this time, I guess. Although this is also the period where I really am discovering Puro for the first time.
Right.
But I was watching a lot of Raw and a lot of SmackDown in 2003.
Oh God. Yeah.
Even though I wasn't really, liking the Raw side so much. Cause the Raw side, like this is the time when like, well, this is more earlier in the year, but this like all that Triple H and Kevin Nash stuff.
Oh man,
so terrible.
There was no one on God's green earth who was just more despicable and vile to me than Triple H and Evolution in like Raw 03, 04. Like he was like they were like evil incarnate, as far as I'm concerned. You know, long before the King of Darkness was around, they were evil. Everything was evil, and it was Evolution. So I hated them so much. But I kept watching because, you know, obviously when you're a young person, when you're a young fan, a new fan, you watch everything because you just want to watch everything. It's this new, exciting thing, and, like, you just come obsessed with it. Like, so many things come obsessed with. You want to watch everything. So I was watching Raw and SmackDown, Heat, Velocity, you know, every week pretty much for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, so 03, I liked the SmackDown brand. I was pretty into because, you know, it had that, like, it was basically Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar shooting over the WWE title. The Big Show was kind of mixed in there, too. They had a really cool three-way match at
Vengeance, 03.
Vengeance, yeah.
You had Taker in there, of course. You have the Cruiserweights, like Rey Mysterio. I was such a huge fan of.
Yes, I was really into the Cruiserweight division.
Love the Cruiserweights. Love Rey Mysterio so much.
This is probably the peak of the WWE Cruiserweight division, which is not to say it was great or anything, but it had like, you know, this like you had Paul London, you had
Ultimo Dragon, Brian Kendrick.
Yeah, all these dudes.
Yeah, Funaki, all the guys. Billy Kidman, Chavo, all the guys, yeah.
This is like, I think, Jimmy Yang was around too,
Jimmy Yang, Akio and Sakota, yeah. Remember them? Like, they were Tajiri's bodyguards.
I was super into all that stuff at the time, which is why, you know, they killed it off later.
But... Yeah, again, when you're a kid, high-flying action, you know, guys flipping around, doing these flippy-doos, it's great. So much fun.
But yeah, so that's basically, meanwhile, I'm Raw, it's more like, I don't know. It's like the Triple H Goldberg thing, which I really wasn't into at all. I like Goldberg,
but the Triple H thing, it was, he just had the title for so long. It just bounced always bounced back to him after a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like as a kid, I sort of liked Triple H, but like even like this is around the time when like I was like reaching my limit with him. I was like, okay, well, I was into you in 2000, buddy, but like this is going on long enough. And...
Yeah, I've gone back and appreciated that Attitude Era stuff from the 2000. That's a great year for him, I think. 2001, the early part too, when he before got injured. But yeah, 03, when he's really bloated, around 04, that kind of stuff. And he's got like the really bleached blonde hair because he's trying to, you know, be like Ric Flair, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a bad taste in my mouth. So the guys on Raw who I liked were Rob Van Dam, Shawn Michaels, who else I'm looking at? Jericho, Booker T, Dudley Boys. So Raw had some good guys as well, I think. I liked.
So, like, I just went back to look, by the way, at the Cruiserweight title history. And this was that 2003 to me is like one of the peaks of the division. Because you look at the history, Matt Hardy had it here.
Yep.
And it went to Rey Mysterio, then Tajiri. And I really liked Tajiri's reign. And then Rey Mysterio had it, won it again at the very end of the year. But then the following year is when they kill it off because.
Let me guess. Let me see if I can remember it. Chavo Guerrero won it.
Yes, and that reign was boring as shit.
Yeah, then he lost it to Jacqueline.
Yup. Always a good sign for the Cruiserweight title.
This is my gift. I can remember that it was random shit. I can remember it all. Jacqueline won it. Then Chavo Classic.
Yeah.
Chavo's dad.
Again, not a good sign of where the title
is. Oh, yeah, great. Oh, give it to an old guy. Always works out, definitely. then we're back to Chavo Jr.
Back to Ray.
No, Chavo. No, it was. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm looking right at it.
Chavo Classic. I thought it was Chavo Classic, then Chavo went on it again, and then Ray went on Chavo.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's Chavo, Jacqueline, Chavo, Chavo Classic, Ray, and then Spike Dudley.
Oh, okay. I missed up then. Oh, okay. Never mind. Yeah, yeah, Ray, then Spike Dudley, then Funaki had
it. Which, yeah, that reign also sucks, Spike Dudley.
It was when he was the heel of Spike Dudley. Yeah. He was the boss of the Dudley Boys. I like when Funaki won it. It was a feel-good moment. Because he was the jobber of the Cruiserweight for so long. It was like, give Funaki a run. You know, he deserves it. You know.
But that 2004, like that, look, all those ring business sum up. And how it kind of sums up how I felt about like SmackDown in 2004, because I really did not like SmackDown at all.
Yeah,
and I guess we'll talk about
it. Yeah, the big crux for SmackDown 04 with me is pretty obvious. It's JBL.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the year starts off so cool because you have that Eddie Guerrero winning the title from Brock Lesnar in a really cool match.
Yeah.
Then you have the Eddie Guerrero-Kurt Angle match at WrestleMania 20.
That was great.
Great match. And then after that, Eddie loses to JBL. And JBL is one of those things that I think you can appreciate more in looking back at it, because he was, you know, he was funny. His matches weren't really good, but like they weren't like, compared to some of the shit we've gotten now, they weren't like the worst things ever either.
Yeah, they sucked you in, of course. I mean, just, you couldn't help but root against this guy. He was,
but the reign just went on. The reign just went on forever.
And
like it just the Booker part of it, especially, just kind of went on forever, and never really went anywhere. The Booker feud,
Booker T, yeah,
yeah, and like Cena, I don't know. Like, it's just... Wait, actually, no. Was that JBL? Well, JBL Booker, right?
Well, JBL Booker was like... What was that? It was like Survivor Series 04 with JBL Booker.
Yeah, and I remember there was like December, like there was like a four-way also.
The four-way was JBL, Booker, Eddie, and Undertaker, where it was like JBL like had to go out there on his own without the cabinet by his side. And like, how is he going to fight him out of this one? And of course, you know, Heidenreich, of all people, interferes and, you know, stops the Undertaker from winning. And then JBL, of course, slinks in and gets the pin on like Eddie or Booker or something like that. But,
I mean, it was kind of funny then when he just kept retaining it, like the Royal Rumble, he got out of that three-way or whatever.
Yeah, and then at No Way Out, it was the barbed wire cage where...
like, oh my God, what barbed wire?
Barbed wire cage match, Big Show choke slams him like off the top rope through the mat. And JBL crawls out from under the ring and wins the match. Which, fair fucks, clever ending. But it's like, God, son of a bitch, he won it again. God.
Yeah. But then he loses it in like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
to Cena in a shitty match at WrestleMania. But anyway. So let's get back. Anyway. Let's move backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
So 2003 closes out. Not the greatest year or anything, but it was okay. This is your, like, for me, it was just a year. For you, I'm sure this is like,
this was my induction. This was me going into wrestling. And, it's been 15 years, early 15 years in July. And on the one hand, time has just flown by. On the other hand, it seems like forever ago.
Yeah. You know,
it's looking, I, on a lark, I wrote up the rosters of what it was like, the roster page for that time period when I started watching, and looking at the names here, it's a time machine, man. Just remembering all these guys who you thought would be there forever, of course, because they're on TV, but you know, eventually one by one, they just go away. It's amazing, man.
Yeah. So like, give us some examples.
I'll give you the roster in full here because we can. It's a 3-hour show. Okay. We can. So, all right.
We don't have to go 3 hours.
I'm just saying it's the time limit we have here to work with. So, but I'll be quick about it. I'll be quick. This is the best of my abilities, what I could find. Okay, so July of 03, we had the Raw side, which was Batista, Booker T, Bubba Ray Dudley, Chris Jericho, Christian, Devon Dudley, Eric Bischoff, Gail Kim, Garrison Cade, Goldberg, Goldust, The Hurricane, Ivory, Jacqueline, Jazz, Kane, Kevin Nash, Lance Storm, Lita, Mark Henry, Mark Jindrak, Maven, Miss Jackie, Molly Holly, Randy Orton, Rene Dupree, Ric Flair, Rico, Rob Conway, Rob Van Dam, The Rock, Rodney Mack, Rosie, Scott Steiner, Shane McMahon, Shawn Michaels, Spike Dudley, Steven Richards, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Sylvain Grenier, Test, Tommy Dreamer, Triple H, Trish Stratus, Val Venus, Victoria, William Regal. That was Raw.
Can I say real quick, because one of the names that stuck out at me that I was like, wow, I haven't heard that guy in a while, was Garrison Cade, and I looked him up and he died.
He passed away.
He passed away at the age of 29 in 2010.
There are a few more names on the list here who you're like, oh boy, I remember that name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd been Garrison Cade, then he was Lance Cade with Trevor Murdoch when he came back with him in 07 or so.
That was in the period when like they had to change everybody's first name so that they couldn't have more than one. God forbid we have more than one Lance or more than one Shane on the roster. So like you had to give him the stupidest name possible, which is Garrison.
Garrison Cade, yeah. You see a lot of Garrisons out there, yeah.
Okay.
So this is SmackDown.
But yeah, that's a downer. Garrison Cade.
I really had
no idea the man was dead.
Yeah,
like, that's terrible.
I would have mentioned Jamal, who also died, but he got released.
Well, Jamal, I knew.
Jamal, got rest in peace. All right, here's SmackDown.
Yeah.
A-Train, Big Show, Bill DeMott, Billy Gunn, Billy Kidman, Bradshaw, Brock Lesnar, Charlie Haas, Chavo Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Chris Kanyon, Chuck Palumbo, Danny Basham, Don Marie, Doug Basham, Eddie Guerrero, Edge, Farouk, Funaki, Hardcore Holly, Jimmy Noble, John Cena, Johnny Stamboli, Kurt Angle, Matt Hardy, Nydia, Nunzio, Orlando Jordan, Paul Heyman, Rey Mysterio, Rhino, Rikishi, Sean O'Hare, Scotty Tuhati, Shaniqua, Shannon Moore, Shelton Benjamin, Spanky, Stephanie McMahon, Tajiri, Tori Wilson, Ultimo Dragon, Undertaker, Vince McMahon, and Zach Gowen.
This is, of course, the Ultimo Dragon WWE return that cost him Tori Wilson.
Yeah,
it
cost him his entire promotion.
The sad part is, he wanted to do like more than anything was wrestle at Madison Square Garden, and he got his wish, and he slipped his first match back. He slipped on the ramp coming down the rampway.
No, that was Mania 20.
Yeah,
I don't know. His first match ever was in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I was there.
That was his debut on TV, and he didn't slip then, but he did slip at Mania, where a lot more people were watching. So,
I think maybe he also had a dream to wrestle WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And he slips on the ramp.
Yeah.
Kanyon
is gone. Eddie's gone. Anyone else? Sean O'Hare is gone.
Yep.
So yeah, there are a few. Few rocking pieces.
It's not as depressing as looking at the 90s.
No.
Rosters where it's like you watch a show from like 1998, like anywhere from half to three quarters like of the card is dead.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of sad. Like I had no idea Mr. Cabe was dead.
Yeah.
I remember liking him.
Yeah. Oh, Test is gone as well. Test is dead. So many people are dead. It's like,
yeah.
Depressing as all hell. But.
So it's an interesting little window at the.
That was the roster. Yeah, that's what I had to work with. So,
I mean, it's not the best roster, that's for sure.
It's not the best, but it's not the worst either. No, I mean, you still got plenty of shining lights here, like Mysterio and you know Rob Van Dam and all that stuff.
It was a weird transitional period because you were starting to lose a lot of the ex-WCW and ECW guys that came in like the early part when those persons died and starting to move more towards. Like some WWE developmental guys.
Yeah, OVW.
Yeah.
Florida.
And then you get into 04 and 05 where it really starts to become heavily on the developmental people.
So let's look,
2004, you know, this is a year that I think is probably, okay. It was a fun year at the time on Raw, but now it's really hard to go back and watch that stuff because of who was involved in so much of the good stuff.
We have to mention Chris Benoit. Listen, I'm not gonna lie, he was one of my favorite guys.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and say
I never liked him. He was my favorite. He was one of my favorite.
Do you want me to go one better than you in this? Look,
go right ahead.
I was at WrestleMania 20. That was the fourth of my five WrestleManias.
Yeah,
I like cried a little when he won.
Oh yeah, when he hugged Eddie. Like it's amazing.
It was an emotional moment. Like and a lot of people in the building were very emotional. Like
yeah,
none of us knew that 3 years later.
No,
you know, this man was gonna do like gone, people, yeah. It was a celebratory moment. People were really, really happy. And, you know, the only people that weren't happy were this family of Triple H marks that I was seeing.
Oh, God. That was like terrible.
Like a couple rows down from me, there was like this whole family of four, like a man, a wife, and their two kids. And they all have Triple H gear on. They're all cheering for Triple H.
Yeah.
And, they were not happy. Yeah. But everybody else
was. Everyone else was fine, but they were very sour about it. Yeah. Mania 20 was my first Mania. So, and I was rooting so hard for Benoit to win because – he was like one of my guys early on SmackDown. Like he'd been screwed over by Heyman so much. Like he had wrestled Lesnar for the belt on SmackDown in like November of 2003 or whatever it was. And he made Lesnar tap out to win the match, but the ref was knocked out and Lesnar cheated to win. And I was like, oh, like so incensed. And then Heyman put Benoit as number one in the Rumble. So, and the Rumble was my first pay-per-view too. So it's like, come on, Chris, come on, win this fucker. Yeah. And it came down to Benoit and Big Show, and that shot of Benoit like you know being hoisted up with a choke slam, and then Benoit hooking the guillotine on him, and like slowly bringing Big Show over the top rope, and it's like come on,
yeah.
He brings him right over, and Benoit wins, and then at Mania he gets Triple H in the crossface, and you know it's like come on, tap out, motherfucker, tap out, and Jerry Lawler is screaming like fight him, scratch him, do anything, stop. And Jamal's like, he's gonna tap. Is he gonna tap? What's gonna? And he taps out, and it's like, fucking yes, he fucking won. Yeah. Yes, he fucking did it. Oh my fucking God!
And then three years later,
he kills his wife and son, and kills himself.
Yeah. So like, you know, I can't rewatch any of that. I'm not one of these people that can go back and enjoy it. Even
I can't do that. That's just me. Listen, I'm not going to begrudge people who say they can't go back. Everyone has a line, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm not like saying like Benoit for Hall of Fame. None of that. I understand why he can't be in it. I understand why they can't celebrate him. It's painfully obvious why they can't do any of that stuff. But there's just a part of me that could still go back and separate it, kind of. But I understand like. People can't
there's a lot of things I can do that with.
Yes, everyone has a lot. Absolutely.
The art from the artist, but that I can't do it.
That's completely fine. I understand it completely.
Yeah. So I haven't seen these matches in a long time, obviously. But you know, at the time I don't go back
and watch them all the time, mind you. But like, if I want to watch it, I'll watch it. So.
But yeah, so at the time I remember enjoying it a lot, and then you know they had the rematch at Backlash.
Mm-hmm.
Where Benoit won with the sharpshooter. Remember that being pretty
Canada,
good too.
Yeah, we made Michaels tap out in Canada. That was great. Yeah.
You know the Orton and Mick Foley stuff was pretty cool.
That was good. That was a good little feud. Yeah. Yeah. Orton was another guy who I detested so fucking much.
Once you get later into the year, though, 2004 kind of falls apart because you have Bad Blood 2004. I remember being like one of the worst papers of all time.
I ordered.
Oh wait, no. What's that? No, that was that Bad Blood. No, I'm thinking of Bad Blood.
No, Bad Blood 4 was the Hell in a Cell match.
Bad Blood 3. I'm thinking of the one with the Austin and Bischoff. The redneck Olympics. Or whatever.
I didn't see that live, obviously.
2004 was probably okay.
2004 was good.
Hell in a Cell match went on forever.
That was a long one, man. That was like 40 minutes of Hell in a Cell.
47 minutes and 26 seconds.
Oh, God. It was even longer than I thought. Yeah.
That match was no good. Benoit and Kane, I remember being okay, but not that great. I remember liking Orton and Shelton Benjamin.
That was good. Yeah, I was really into Benjamin too a lot because he got that big upset win over Triple H on Raw, and that was like the starting point of like the Benjamin push of that year.
But this is also like the first, you know, one other match on the undercard here is Eugene against Jonathan Coachman.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how you felt about Eugene, but like
I was young at the time, so it didn't really bother me at all.
Did you like it or no? Because I felt like that was
he wasn't that one was of the target guys. I mean, like, okay. But I, so
I feel like kids were the target audience. That's why
kids were. Yeah, I didn't mind him. I didn't hate him, but he was just kind of there. I did like the pairing with Regal, because when Triple H eventually turned on Eugene and beat him up, and then Eugene came back and cost Triple H the match in the Iron Man match against Benoit, and then Regal cuts that like amazing fucking promo on Triple H, where it's like what kind of monster would let Eugene into the building to attract Triple H? Well, who would do something like that? Oh yeah, it was me, Sunshine. And he goes face turn on Triple H, and it was so great. So yeah, but the UG stuff, like looking back, it's like I don't know about that. But
I mean, look, at the time, even I thought it was pretty stupid. Yeah. Especially when they, you know, I mean, I feel like even in 2004, we knew we probably weren't supposed to be making fun of, you know, handicapped.
Immensely handicapped, yeah.
It is. And then, like, the really, really, like, egregious thing, of course, when they turned him heel, briefly.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, like, you know, I mean, as bad as, like, you know, the whole thing was, like, having him be, like, a heel mentally handicapped person's not great.
Yeah, it's
But, yeah, so, like, the rest of this year, like, I remember Edge and Randy Orton had a really cool Intercontinental title match of Vengeance.
Yeah, that was good. That was when Edge finally beat Orton for the belt.
Yeah, I remember liking that match a lot. Yeah. I'm just going through his papers trying to see anything else I really liked. Yeah. I mean, that Orton Benoit match, I don't remember it at all. Where Orton won the title from him.
It was all right, I guess. It was kind of a shock because it's like Orton won the title. Holy shit! Like he's this young guy, and it's like he hadn't really done that much. He was IC champion for a long time, but you didn't expect him to like get the rocket strap that quickly, you know, but obviously. I'm done. Yeah.
Oh, what were you going to say? Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
What was I going to say? Obviously they saw big things for him. If they gave him the big match in his first title match, you know, that quickly, of course.
Yeah. And the SmackDown side of things is like, I'm looking at these cards like, oh my God, like this is Mordecai.
Kenzo Suzuki.
Kenzo Suzuki, who like, do you know the story behind him, what Vince wanted to call him originally?
Please enlighten me. I'm sure it was something very tasteful, indeed.
Vince wanted to call him Hirohito after the Emperor
during World War II.
And claimed that he was looking to get revenge in America for the atom bombing.
Oh, boy.
Now, if you know anything about Japan, like, This is not going to be considered tasteful.
And
someone had to talk Vince out of this and be like, look, Vince, like they really don't, first of all, they really don't give a shit about the atom bomb anymore. Like obviously it's not a great subject, but like, it's not one that comes up all the time there or anything.
Yeah, best leave it alone, but, I think.
Yeah. But then they were like, it would be considered very insensitive to use the Emperor's name for your wrestling character. And somehow they actually managed to talk Vince out of this and, you know, just name Kenzo Suzuki, which is good. But like, it went so far that a vignette aired on Raw with the name Hirohito.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, so like, it said like Hirohito is coming, and then after a week or two, it just turned into Kenzo Suzuki is coming. Mm. So I'm glad they talked about that one.
Yes, well, at least he still had the very tasteful geisha for his
That was his wife.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I mean, it's not wrong having a geisha for a wife for a manager. It's just, I don't know.
It's still a very,
I guess it's stereotypical, but on the WWE scale. It's a very
stereotypical thing, but,
The WWE scale, I don't know if that one.
It could have been, all right, I see what you're saying. It could have been a lot worse.
It could have been a lot worse.
Yes, but it's still a very stereotypical thing, but it could have been worse. I understand it now. Okay.
And this is also when, like, Kurt Angle had, like, the most generic henchman of all time, and he had Luther Reigns and
Mark Jindrak.
Mark Jindrak.
Baby. Okay. The reflection of perfection, Mark Jindrak. When he had Teddy Long as his manager, and he came to SmackDown for the draft, and he wrestled like 8 weeks straight in Velocity, as like the reflection of perfection, Mark Jindrak.
This is also like the period when I was still going to WWE shows. So I'm through here, it's like No Mercy 2004, Continental Airlines Arena. I was there for that show. Was not very good. It was JBL beating the Undertaker in a Last Ride match in the main event.
Oh yeah.
Cena, Booker T in the Best of Five series. Big Show, Kurt Angle. I remember liking Billy Kidman and Paul London, but it was only 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't like this was not a good show. Not very good.
Yeah. Charlie Haas, Miss Jackie, and Rico versus Don Marie and the Dudley Boys.
I'm sure that I really have no memory of that, so I'm assuming
I have a memory.
I probably went up and took a piss or something.
I don't remember the match. I do remember Charlie Haas and Rico though when they became a tag team. They were tag team champs for God's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't remember.
I remember. I remember it well. I remember it well.
But yeah, so 2004, not a great year. Mm. You know, it started better than it ended. SmackDown, I think, was pretty terrible almost the whole way through after JBR won the title. Raw was okay, but really wasn't very good. Like this fall period where Hunter wins the belt back from Orton in a month.
And yeah, like, that was.
Yeah, it was pretty stupid. And then it wasn't very good. 2005, though, things kind of pick up. We talk a little bit about 05 because this I think is actually one of the better WWE years. When you look back on it, you have a lot of cool stuff here. You have the Shawn Michaels Kurt Angle feud,
which
is cool. You have the Batista Triple H feud, which you know the matches aren't awful or anything, and the actual feud itself is like one of the better builds they've done in probably the last like 20 years.
Yeah, I was rooting for Batista. I became a big Batista fan because of
this. It was a good build. You know, one of the better manias, I think. You know, the first Money in the Bank match.
Eddie Ray,
Angle Shawn. Undertaker Orton, I remember being really good for 14
minutes. It caught me so good when Orton got the RK off the chokeslam. I was like, fucking ass, he's going to win. Nope, he doesn't win. So, yeah.
Cena, I mean, the only thing that really I thought was pretty terrible was Cena and JBL. But I remember that being a really crappy ending. The sumo match
between Akebono and Big Show, long before Akebono was, you know, Japan's Akebono and all Japan.
No, he was a wrestler, though.
Was he a wrestler?
Okay. He was a big K-1 star at the time.
Okay, I meant as like a pro wrestler, wrestler Akebono, you know, trailing on promotions in Japan. But
yeah, but yeah, I mean, like, it's something. I don't know. That was a good mania. I remember it also had like the Hogan run in to clear the ring.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned Muhammad Hassan. Yes.
The theme song is really good.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned like before how you loved that theme song. It made you laugh when you heard on the episode of
what
we did. Yeah.
And so that theme song is cool. But I don't know if I need a white person singing that, Andrew. But
come on, man. It's been 13 years, right?
Give me a break. But like I was trying to say though, like the Cena wins the belt from JBL here in an 11-minute match.
Yeah,
and like it's so funny. This is his first of like 16 title wins because, and like the start really of like the Cena era, because this match fucking sucks. And it's like nothing. Like the crowd, if you go back and watch it now, it's like, it's almost in a death slot here between Angle Shawn and the main event. It's so clearly like the number two match of those two title matches. And like the crowd barely gives a shit. Like he wins the title with the FU out of nowhere, which, you know, after all this time of JBL having the title reigns, talking about anticlimactic ending. He just loses it in 11 minutes to the FU. But like the crowd just like, it's like, yeah, like they politely clap. I have this image in my head of these two like Japanese fans who are there for, I think, Akebono or something, like politely in the front row. Or maybe they could have been like, you know, like front rows of comps a lot. They could have just been with the Akebono group or something. I just have this memory of them standing up and going, yeah, like like very politely clapping.
Well, that was where he jumped into the crowd.
Yeah,
I think that's a photo of him in the crowd with the title and the audience around him. So
it's really fun. It's something.
Yeah.
But yeah, WrestleMania 21, good show. Hell of a good show, I think. Mm. Especially when you look at some of the manias that came, like 22 the next year, which I was at. I don't think it was anywhere near as good as this one. But let's see. What else happened? Like, there's some other good shows that year too. We have, you know, I remember I don't think Backlash was very good, but Judgment Day was pretty good. I mean, because that Cena JBL I Quit match
was much better than the match.
Surprisingly good and Mysterio.
That whole feud, that blood feud between Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero, I remember like being into that at the time.
It got very stupid with the
dumb stuff. But, like. that shot of Eddie, like, just bloody Rey Mysterio and taking his mask, it was like, that stood with me for a while. Because it's like, how could he do this? How could Eddie Guerrero, like, my hero, do this to another one of my heroes? But yeah, man, that was the brilliance of Eddie Guerrero. Like, he could make you hate him so much after loving him for so long.
And then you had that, you had Vengeance, which was a really cool show because they basically, like, on technicality, they loaded it up because, you know, all these guys being drafted around.
But yeah, that was the draft year that was like, they didn't have a show for it. It was just like a guy would come out on a Raw. And, like, you know, like Eric Bischoff would say, here is the first, you know, draft pick of Monday Night Raw or whatever. And it was John Cena. He was the champion at the time. So there was a period of time where Raw had the WWE and World Heavyweight titles on the same show, and SmackDown had nothing.
Which really, really helped with the ongoing appearance of SmackDown as the B show.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, they were going to make a SmackDown title. And then, of course, which JBL won the match. And it was going to be like, oh, no, like the Reign of Terror is starting again. And then, you know, Teddy Long comes out. And it's like, you know, here is the last pick of SmackDown in the draft. Batista is world champion. So the title switch brands.
And so I set up JBL getting the shot at Great American Bash, which I don't remember that match at all, honestly. So, but Vengeance had Batista and Hunter in a Hell in a Cell match. I remember being pretty good. The Shawn Michaels Kurt Angle rematch, I remember being good. Mm-hmm. And like a cool little three-way match with Cena, Jericho, and Christian. I remember liking that too. So good show.
Yeah.
This is also around this time we had the first one-night stand.
Yep.
Now, sadly, I did not go to this one-night stand. I went to the second one. I went to 06, but I did not go to this one. And, you know, this was a weird thing because it was a cool show, especially if you were – did you see the show? Here's an interesting question.
Not like, live, but later on.
Because, like, it would have been fun. Like, what do you think as a kid who didn't grow up with all this ECW?
I had heard of ECW. I hadn't seen much of it. I mean, this is around the time where I started – 05 is around the time where I started, like, watching matches online and seeking stuff out from the past. So I hadn't seen much of ECW. I'd heard the name a bunch. So, like, watching this show where, like, all these – it was a mix between guys who were in WWE at the time and older guys would come back. So it was pretty.
Yeah. They couldn't get everybody they wanted either. Cause a lot of people.
Cause there was the hardcore homecoming or whatever it was, the reunion show. But yeah, it was cool to see like guys wearing like old tights and coming out to old music. Like Rey Mysterio came out to like his ECW theme. Like the three-way dance between Super Crazy, Tajiri, and Little Guido, and like the FBI coming out, and you know Sinister Minister coming out, Mikey Whipwreck, and so seeing like all these guys who I had just heard about, kind of, but not really watched much of their stuff. It was pretty cool to see, and there was also the show with that fucking awesome Mike Awesome, no pun intended, Mike Awesome and Sato Tanaka match, which was like 10 minutes long, and it was just fucking brutal and awesome.
And then also killed himself like a year later, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which kind of takes the shine off of that one.
Thanks a lot, John. You're bringing it down again, John. Thanks a fucking lot. I'm trying to be like rah rah great matches, but here you go, bringing it down again. But yeah,
it's very much like an abbreviated version of their whole series, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, like,
yeah, it was a shorter match, but
the weird thing is like Awesome is dead. Masato Tanaka's still doing all the same shit.
He's still alive and kicking.
Yeah.
He hasn't aged a day.
He's like my number seven match of the year for 2018 so far. So
yeah, he's still taking chair shots to the head like a fucking maniac. And
yeah,
he's still kicking. It's crazy.
But, him and Yusaku Obata and 01 right on January 1st. I thought they had a really awesome match for the 01 title.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard
it's really good.
Things. Yeah.
But yeah, like he's still going 13 years after this. And, but I don't know. Some people I think just have like, you know, he's one of these guys I think just has like a really hard head or something.
Yeah. He can just, he's just like, yeah, he just keep going and going and going. It's pretty crazy.
But yeah, this is a cool show, but like, at the time, it felt pretty special, even if you weren't like a huge ECW fan. Like I was around during the ECW days, but that was when I was very young, and I wasn't, you know, I went to like, I think I watched like two shows in Queens or something, and that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. I never went to the ECW arena during during ECW's like heyday or anything. Right. And the shows I went to like very much towards the end of ECW, not the peak of it. Right. So I didn't have the same nostalgia as most people. And but still, because it still stood out compared to what WWE was doing at the time.
Oh yeah, this is a completely different show. I remember
in a lot of ways can feel like cardboard, you know.
Yeah, it's still the atmosphere in that building was just so palpable and electric. Like Sandman making the entrance to Metallica song Enter Sandman, it's like the building is shaking. It's like it's crazy, and you don't see that at other shows. Certainly not like, you know, a Great American Bash or an Unforgiven, which is just another show. But like this was special, even though I didn't really know like how special it was truly, because I didn't live through that stuff. But I could still tell that this was different and exciting.
Yeah, but it's very like you're saying, even if you weren't into it, it stood out.
Yeah,
so it just felt different from everything else that everybody else was doing. But yeah, so cool show. If you go back and watch it, I think I went back and watched it like a year ago or something. It's not the greatest show ever or anything, but it's still fun to watch. It's a fun waste of a couple of hours. Yeah. But yeah, WWE itself though was not having that bad of a year. Which again, later on, you have SummerSlam 05, which I remember this being a pretty good show. Again, I remember liking. What was on this show? Cena Jericho, I remember Cena being pretty Jericho good.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, the ladder match with Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero, I remember being pretty good. Yeah. Hogan and Shawn Michaels was
that was fun.
Yeah, it was an interesting match because it's two. It was one of the last like real dream matches.
Yeah,
with 90s guys who never wrestle each other, and you know, obviously when Shawn takes that big boot and like does that crazy.
Oh style, yeah,
it is really incredible.
Just flies all over the ring.
And,
yeah.
He just makes him look like a fucking idiot, yeah. And the way he just totally goes back on his heel turn was so funny to me. But I was so into the heel turn because I was more into heel Shawn Michaels like 97 anyway than I was into the babyface thing. But because Hogan didn't want to play a ball, basically, and the whole thing was like, so Shawn, you know, is like telling Hogan, it's like, well, we can do a couple matches if you want, you know, I just have to win one of them. Hogan didn't want to let Shawn win. He's like, oh, we could do another match anyway. Okay,
not gonna work, brother. Not gonna work.
And Shawn's just like, well, I'm not gonna do that then. I don't want to lose to you twice.
Yeah,
and it's like, and it's totally understandable. It's like, why would he want to lose this man 2 months in a row for no fucking reason?
Right.
So basically, it's Hogan's fault that we were robbed of another month of heel Shawn.
Heel Shawn Michaels.
Very,
yeah.
Very sad. Instead, he said he had a really cool match at Chris Masters though, as Unforgiven the next month. I remember liking that match a lot. Mm-hmm. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that match that much. Unfortunately, I don't remember Shawn Michaels versus Chris Masters. Unlike you, John.
I remember liking it. I don't know why. Yeah. But yeah, then that starts like the Cena and Angle feud that would go on for like the rest of the year.
Yeah.
2005, pretty cool year. The Batista title reign, not really as good because, you know, the JBL matches don't remember being anything special. Mm. And then the Eddie Guerrero match he has like right before Eddie dies really wasn't very good. But in hindsight, it's kind of understandable why. But yeah, the rest of 05, not bad. Is 05 the Survivor Series match? Is that the crazy one with Shawn where he like it's left to him at like 5-on-1?
No. Technically yes, but this is like a recurring thing with Shawn. Like, because in 03, I remember 03, the 03 Survivor Series, it was Team Austin versus Team Bischoff.
Oh, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah,
sorry. Where it was, let me see if I can get it. It was Shawn, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, and the Dudleys versus Orton, Jericho, Christian, Steiner, and Henry. And it comes down to Shawn versus Orton, Jericho, and Christian. And of course, Shawn Michaels becomes a bloody fucking mess.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking.
And he's fighting for his life. And hey, fair fucks, it's fucking compelling as all hell. Yeah. Like Shawn Michaels just barely holding on. Just like he gets Christian with a switch of music and just like falls on top of him. As like desperation roll up on Jericho. And he's like fighting for his life against Orton. And then at the end of it, like Batista screws him over. And then Orton wins the match. And then this one in 05, it was pretty much the same thing where it was this whole year. Actually, it's funny. 05 was the whole like SmackDown versus Raw year. Cause at the Rumble, it was like, that was like Bischoff coming out of the Rumble and Teddy Long coming out, like rooting for their sides. And as the year went on, there was sort of like little mini like aggressions between both sides. And then it all came to a head at Survivor Series. And then it was Batista, JBL, Lashley, Orton, and Rey for SmackDown against Shawn, Big Show, Kane, Masters, and Carlito for Raw. And then it came down to, again, 3-on-1, which was Orton, JBL, and Rey versus Shawn. And then Shawn eliminates Rey, eliminates JBL, and once again, Orton manages to beat Shawn at the very end.
Yeah, so yeah,
that was the match.
That sounds pretty cool, but I don't remember it at all. So
I remember Shawn caught Rey with a super kick off the springboard off the top, which is pretty fucking awesome. He did that to Shelton Benjamin too, which is a great clip, a classic one from Raw.
Yeah,
but, yeah.
Do you want to keep going to 2006 here? Yeah.
Sure. Let's keep going. We still have
New Year's Revolution. That's a pretty famous show where Cena wins a pretty good elimination chamber, and then Edge cashes in the Money in the Bank for the first time.
Yeah, that was,
and beats Cena in an all time great moment.
That's great. Yeah, Edge is another guy who it's like, because when I started watching, Edge was injured with the neck injury for like a full year, and then he came back on Raw when he was drafted over. And it's like he's a face at first, icy champ, and then slowly but surely Edge becomes like more and more of a heel, till eventually he's like a full blown asshole. And then in 2005, of course, the whole Lita Matt Hardy thing happens, and that whole shenanigans happens, so he becomes even more of an asshole. And then here we have him cashing in Money in the Bank, which he had held for like 10 months, and it was like, oh, son of a bitch. He cost my hero the belt. So, yeah, Edge was one of those guys who was like, you hated him at the time, of course, but like looking back, I appreciated him a lot for how good he was as a character.
Yeah, it's interesting, but so you as a kid, you're saying you really hated him, but
I hated all the heels.
Okay, so like, you were not one of these kids who liked the heels, basically.
No, I was not one of those kids. Not at first, at least. Over time, of course, as I became more and more older and more jaded and more of a more like you and everyone else on this stupid planet, hating everything. Grr. You start to when you're a kid, heroes and villains, it's you root for the heroes, you boo the villains. It is what it is. And then over time, you get older and you start to see more of the world. And you start to get your own opinions on things, and you start to root for who appeals to you and who you see as like your heroes, not what everyone else thinks is a hero.
Yeah.
So over time, of course, you start to root for people you like, who you think are good, whether that be in your case Naito, or in other cases. Edge, who over time I started to like a lot more. So that is what it is. When you're young, you start to
you go with it. Yeah,
you go with it. When you're young, you go with it because you don't know anything else, and you're innocent and naive. But when you're older, you start to become more and more rebellious and start to form your own opinions about things.
Yeah. So I don't do you have on Raw in the background too? This gauntlet's still going, and
my TV is off. I haven't watched anything.
Did Vince die? I don't understand. Like, what the fuck? We're just gonna have like a 2-hour match on Raw.
I'll have to look at the Twitter feed and go back and
it's been going on forever.
Watch the TDE GIFs, but give me updates. But yeah. It's still going, I guess. All right.
It's still going. Like, we still got like half the people left. Yeah. I was like, anyway. But yeah, so 2006. I remember this being more of like an up and down year, I guess. I'm trying to remember what the fuck happened. I guess this is the year the DX come back.
Yep.
Which I'm not gonna lie, God, how fucking old was I here? I guess as a 20-year-old idiot, I just turning 20, I was pretty into it. But that was because I liked the original DX, and looking back on it now, it looks really stupid because like
it was. But as a 13-year-old idiot, I liked it too. So
yeah, like I can't watch it now because it's like these two men in their late 30s, early and mid 40s, like acting like middle schoolers is pretty stupid.
But. Yeah. poster, the SummerSlam poster, which is like a pool party, and you know, Triple H and Shawn Michaels like at the grill, and Triple H is holding up like a really big sausage, and Shawn is holding up like a little like tiny little like wiener dog. Yeah. It's like, oh ha ha, it's their penises, oh ha ha. Shenanigans abound. So it's like, all right, we get it. We know what we're doing there.
But I mean, like the I will say the lead up to them coming back together as a team was kind of cool.
That was the whole Shawn versus Vince feud.
Yeah, which I was into it. I liked it.
He mocks then, God. He mocks God.
And they made a big deal of like Triple H being such an asshole that you weren't sure he was actually going to team back up with him again. But
yeah,
it was cool once they finally did it. It was good, but this is the kind of thing they used to be good at, which like these long builds to stuff. Yeah. And it feels like they really aren't very good at it anymore.
Yeah. Like, it's funny. Like you don't imagine rooting for Triple H when you hate him so much, you know, yeah. When you're a kid, like I will never like this guy no matter what. And then slowly, but surely, of course you start to root for him. And that's the beauty of wrestling. Like, you know, if done properly, anything can happen and it makes sense and you go along with it.
Yeah. So WrestleMania 22, this would be the final WrestleMania I went to. I went out to Chicago for this. And to be honest, this is a period too where I haven't talked about it a lot, but this is like really, I was really into Ring of Honor during this period. That's when I was going to pretty much every show in the Northeast in the front row from like,
yeah, I heard that episode.
Oh, four. Yeah.
The JR, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like 04 and 05. And then like 03 is when I first started going. But yeah, so like so 06, I was still very much going to a lot of shows, and I remember the Ring of Honor shows from that weekend a lot better than I remember WrestleMania itself, you know, with all the Dragon Gate guys and everything. I was already a pretty big fan of Dragon Gate, so
Big Six Man, that's right. That was that weekend, yeah.
But yeah, you know, it was cool. The WrestleMania itself, I don't remember being that great. I just remember I remember there being this guy, sitting in the row in front of me, okay, who was like this, I don't know, he's like a stereotypical like metalhead or something. Like he had a lot of tattoos, he had like the metal hair, and right. He was doing like, he put up like the metal sign and like was doing like the metal rock out for Kane's theme song. And I remember he really did not like me for some reason, and when the entire crowd at the end was chanting like "fuck you Cena" during
yeah.
Cena Hunter match, he
was the turnover,
like,
yeah.
He was really like, I guess he liked Cena or something, but he looked up at me and was like, "fuck you emo," because I had like I had this black hair at the time, so I guess he thought I was emo.
Right.
So right. I was like, okay. And he started saying like, "oh, there's kids in the audience," and I was like, "well, the entire audience is chanting it, buddy. Why are you only mad at me?" But
yeah, that was, I remember that being like, I remember watching that and being like, "what are they? Why are they chanting this? Like why?" Like, why are they booing him? Like, what is going on? And it's like, this was the beginning of John Cena sucks.
Not the chant, but
like the whole mentality of you suck, John Cena. We don't like you anymore.
So. Yeah, really started in the Jericho feud and then really kicked onto Overdrive.
Triple H here. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
With the Angle feud too.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, so after that, 2006, I mostly remember as the DX year, Rey Mysterio with the worst World Heavyweight title reign of all time.
Oh God. I listened to a podcast called the Attitude Era podcast. And, one of the things they did was they did a bonus episode. The fans voted to see which show they wanted to watch. And the show they voted for was Great American Bash 06, which is a terrible show. And They went over the title reign for Mysterio, and it's like clean loss, clean loss, clean loss, clean loss, DQ, clean loss, fuck finish, clean loss, DQ, count out, win, loss, clean. It's like, it's so bad.
Can I say, by the way, this reminds me, I guess, because Great Khali, this is like the period where Great Khali was around, and he had beaten Rey Mysterio but cleanly. They have like an 8.5 minute match at Judgment Day 06 with Great Khali and Undertaker that might be like the greatest, like of all the achievements in Undertaker's career. No one remembers this, but like at the time, it's just like, oh, this 8.5 minute match, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Given how bad Khali was, like this is that match is like a minor fucking miracle. Right. Honestly, like you should go, people should go back and watch it. It's like, I don't even know how to describe it, but somehow Undertaker makes that 8.5 minutes very watchable. Yeah. So congratulations to
that's Taker, man. He can, yeah, when he was still, you know, healthy and still in his peak, you know, he could do with the best of them.
Yeah. But, so that was the, this is also around the time we get the second one night stand, which is, I also went, that was the one I went to.
Right.
It's a pretty fun show. But nothing as good as the first one, especially if you go back and watch it now. It's just like,
yeah.
See why they were setting this brand up for failure. And
well, they were in it even late. It was like you had 05 was like the gravy's on the stove here. You know, it's boiling over. Like you can do something, and then they wait a year to do it. So
yeah, I mean, I still think, I think if they had done what they had done in 05 instead of 06, it still would have failed. Maybe it would have taken a little bit longer to fail.
Maybe, yeah. You never know, but I think waiting a year was kind of didn't help matters, certainly.
So one night, what did you think of the ECW brand at the time? Were you into it at all?
I watched a few. I mean, it was like, I remember being like excited because like, oh, it's this new thing. Like, what's this going to be? It's going to be like hardcore death matches every single week. And it didn't come that, obviously. It sort of became like, you know, sort of like just Raw and SmackDown with a new name pretty much. But
yeah.
I remember being a little excited for it at the time because it's like they had like those first shows in the Hammerstein Ballroom and like crowds were like really like chanting and really like against the product or whatever. But you know, RVD was champ and that was cool because I was a big fan of RVD. But then a little
Big Show won the title.
A little thing called getting arrested for you know, getting pulled over for marijuana is you know, little kink in the works there for RVD. But yeah, Big Show being ECW champion was kind of a moment.
Okay, can I say, here's, this is one of those things that was never going to get over because of, you know, what the fact that, you know, the fans who were in ECW didn't want it. But Big Show did some really cool stuff as ECW champion. Like, that whole period was one of my favorite periods of his career.
Really?
Yeah, like, he had, like, a match against Ric Flair.
Oh yes,
that was really
Drew Flynn attacks or something
that was,
like that.
That was awesome. He had like a little feud with Batista during this.
I'll have to go back and look at that stuff again because I don't really remember.
And like, you know, I don't know, like the Sabu match at SummerSlam wasn't that bad considering the state Sabu was in at the time. I don't know. I remember liking this whole period a lot for him. And then this is, of course, he loses the title and just, you know, goes away for a long time after that. Like I think like 2 years probably or something like that, right? Because he loses the title to Lashley.
He lost the title to Lashley at the Chamber.
He took at least a year. I think he comes back like No Way Out 08.
Yes, and he was noticeably slimmer.
Yeah.
Like a lot healthier
and looking. And then he gained the weight back. And like
eventually, yeah. He's got up and down, to be honest with Big Show. He's been big. He's been cut. You know, he's been ripped. But he 08 was when he became like, you know.
But yeah, I'm gonna be out here.
Quote unquote skinny Big Show, if that's a thing, you know. But
yeah. I'm gonna be the Big Show ECW title reign apologist. I thought it was pretty great.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like this whole period 2006, not a bad year at all, actually. I'd say it's better than 03 or 04.
It was pretty good. Yeah, there were some highlights. Yeah.
Cena and Edge had a pretty cool TLC match for the title.
That was great. Yeah.
No, like the stuff that really doesn't hold up really is the DX and Vince stuff. It doesn't hold up at all.
Oh,
they had a DX.
I was gonna say we forgot to mention King Booker.
Yes, King Booker.
I love King. My favorite thing about King Booker, and I say this all the time, my favorite thing about King Booker is, you know, of course, being King Booker, he would talk in this very regal tone. You know, you go to Tay Long's office, you know, say, "Yo, Thaddeus, your king demands a world title match against that swine Batista." And then Teddy, of course, would say, "All right, player, you can get a title match after you go one-on-one with The Undertaker." And Booker would immediately switch back to old Booker T and be like, "Oh, hell no, nah, Teddy, yeah. Hell no." Nah. It was like the best thing ever. I love that so much.
The King Booker stuff is okay. It's just very – like that was around the period where SmackDown kind of got kind of eh for me again. Mm. Like that No Mercy and Armageddon, those two –
yeah.
SmackDown only pay-per-views of them both being pretty terrible. But yeah, so SmackDown maybe kind of got worse as the year went on. Survivor Series, though, that was another show I was at. Pretty good show. not the main event wasn't that great, which was Batista winning the title from King Booker. Do you remember why they were like hesitant to put the title on Batista, by the way?
I'm trying to remember.
It's a funny story. Vince was like unimpressed with him for one very specific reason.
Okay. It's Vince, so it's gotta be something fucking weird.
All right. Well, instead of having a bunch of dead air, let me just tell you.
Yeah, please. I can't think of anything too weird for Vince, to be honest.
Batista and Booker had a shoot fight.
In the backstage area. Yes.
And Booker kicked his ass. So Vince like lost his respect for Batista or something.
That's right.
So Batista Batista wants to win the title earlier, and Vince like kept dragging his feet on it until it finally happened Survivor Series. Vince was not happy with Booker with Batista for losing that real fight to Booker. Hilariously, Batista would go on to be in shoe fights.
Yeah.
Or at least one shoe fight. I don't know if a couple of them. He apparently couldn't handle Booker.
Guess not.
So that's a pretty decent show, I guess. Yeah. I really don't remember that much about it, but
I remember the DX versus Rated RKO Survivor Series match.
It was really funny because
the clean sweep. Yeah,
remember how it started?
I love how it starts. Okay, yeah. So Team DX is of course DX, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, CM Punk against Edge, Orton, Helms, Nitro, and Mike Knox. And so it starts off. Mike Knox is like starting it off, and he's like the whole thing with Mike Knox on ECW was he had Kelly Kelly as like his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Kelly Kelly was like an exhibitionist, and she would like, you know, show off her skin, that kind of stuff.
And, like, and oh. Mike Knox would like come on.
Mike Knox hated that. He was like,
because you know, if you hate exhibitionists, you're obviously going to date an exhibitionist.
Of course, obviously.
Yeah.
So Mike Knox is like arguing with Kelly Kelly, like as the bell starts. He turns around, bam. Super kick from Shawn Michaels. 1, 2, 3, he's out. And then Shawn goes over to his team and is like, who was that?
Yeah.
Was he in the match?
He's asking who it was. Apparently, this was a very inside joke because like they were going over the match in like the producer room or something backstage, and Shawn could not remember, had no idea who Mike Knox was, couldn't remember him even when he came out multiple times. So they decided to turn it into an in-joke, which is shitty for Mike Knox.
I know, but it's funny. It's really funny. As all hell. Yeah, he super kicks him, and he's like, all right. It's like, no, it was like he super kicked him, and it's like, do I pin him? Is he in the match? He's like, all right, I'll pin him. He pins him and gets the win. So that was very funny. Yeah.
But yeah. It's one of these shows where I don't remember liking any individual match that much. Like, it probably didn't have anything over like a 3-star match, but like, I still remember liking the show, which I guess happens.
Yeah.
Remember having a good time. But yeah. And then 2006 wraps up with Armageddon, which we already said was pretty bad, and DW December to Dismember. Do you want to know something funny? This is one of the worst, the lowest ordered shows of all time. I think it did like something like 60,000 buys in America. I was one of them. I bought it.
There you go. I was not.
Okay. I wanted to see one match, which was the Hardys against Eminem. That's how they sold my pay-per-view buy.
Right.
I really didn't care about the. I mean, I like the Elimination Chamber, so I figured, well, I'll get an Elimination Chamber too at least, and it did not end up being a very good one.
No, because they replaced Sabu with like Hardcore Holly or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the rest of the show, no, I wasn't very into it. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember liking that tag match, I guess. Probably not enough to spend the money, but it wasn't my money. So.
Yeah.
2006, pretty decent year. Yeah. And then you get into the run up to WrestleMania 23 in 2007, which is a mania I almost went to. Like I was in like, I planned on going, and then like stuff came up at the last second when I would have been planning it. So I've still never been to a stadium mania because by the time, pretty much this is the end of my. Of what I would call like being very into WWE, after Mania 23, my interest starts to wane heavily and really never recovered.
Yeah, Mania 23 is the last WWE pay per view I bought, or my parents bought, I should say.
Yeah.
But yeah, after that one, I have the network now because of my dad. I use his account, so I haven't bought a pay per view since.
I have the network too. I have a friend's account, and I think I probably did buy the occasional pay per view after this. But like, yeah, as far as me being really into WWE and like liking it and watching at least Raw every week. This is pretty much the end.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I stopped watching it every week after this.
I just got
burned out a little bit, you know, because I had watched every single week, and when I was still, you know, in middle school or whatever, I would have my dad tape the second hour of Raw because my bedtime was 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I would watch from 9 to 10. My dad would tape from 10 to 11, and then I watched the next morning.
The issue is, I guess, like,
but after that,
I wonder what it is, like, because what it is after Mania 23 that like kind of drops off for because I've heard a lot of people say, like, after 2007, you know, Mania 24 is a decent enough show, but it's also when like they started loading up like Floyd Mayweather to try to make it a big deal and have Ric Flair's career on the line. And,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like the Undertaker Edge match. I remember being pretty good, but
that
probably not.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, this is a start to me of like something missing with WWE compared. Not that these years we talked about was like the greatest of all time or anything, but like, I don't know. It felt like this is the point here. Like the build up to WrestleMania 23 is some of my favorite WWE television of all time. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that stuff on Raw building up to the Cena Shawn Michaels match with like Edge and Orton and everything. That was really like that. Basically every week was awesome during that period.
Yeah.
And after that period, it just, I don't know, like felt like something kind of like stopped and just didn't, it never got back to that again for me.
I think with me, it was more a case of like starting to watch other stuff.
Well, yeah,
I had watched TNA from like 2004 on, but like I'd started like branching out to watching some other things, and also high school was starting soon, like a few months, so I kind of been more busy. So I still kept up with, you know, all the results, and I still watched, you know, shows from here to there. But as far as like an every week in and out type of thing, it was certainly depleted. Absolutely.
Yeah, and this is like same thing with me. Like, well, I mean, I'd already been watching a lot of like Puro and lots of other stuff, and just
right
around this period, I probably just like watched less wrestling in general.
Yeah,
I never took like a big break. Like, if you're talking about this in the voice of wrestling,
slide, yeah,
I never took like an extended break where I wasn't watching anything.
Right,
but I probably was watching, like, first of all, my Ring of Honor interest really dies around this time too. Like 2002, Ring of Honor, I watched. I still went to a lot of shows in 2007. Mm-hmm. And then like 2008 is where it starts dying down for me, and by the time I get to 2009, I'm not really going at all anymore. And then like from 2009 on, it's pretty much just Puro and like popping in on WWE, and you know, I had a run where I was really into Chikara for like a year.
Yeah.
And that was like during the BDK year. But like, yeah, I mean,
that was a great year, yeah.
I feel like my WWE love never comes back after this, really.
Yeah.
It's like an interesting case study in why that is that I was never able to, because there've been good periods. I mean, there was like, you know, the period everybody loves that Shield.
The Shield run was great. That first run was great matches. You know,
obviously the Daniel Bryan stuff,
Punk and Bryan, all that stuff.
But I don't know. Yeah. It never got back to the level it was for me. So.
It's all about the tastes. You know, tastes change. Yeah. You know, nothing set in stone, of course. But you know. But
I feel like maybe a constant might be Shawn, because like I was really into Shawn Michaels when I was younger, and like, not that he retires after this, but this is like kind of the end of him as like a big regular, you know, like main eventing this
there
Mania.
There are periods where Shawn goes away for a little bit, or whatever,
and like he it feels like he never gets back to that level again, really. Yeah. And like, you know, after this, you know, Mania 24, he has the Flair match, and then
the last three Manias for Shawn were like, or the last four, like Shawn had fucking amazing Manias like his last years. I mean, the Vince match, I think, was a lot of fun. The Angle match before that, you had the Triple H match before that, the Jericho match before. I mean, I think pretty much like every Mania since his comeback was pretty fucking great. His matches, like the Jericho.
I'm saying, like, that's something that's missing, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like nothing really, I don't know, filled that void to the degree he could.
Those two Taker matches are like two of my favorite matches of all time.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, moments with a Z. It's less, you know, more about like making like that match versus 7 hour shows with moments.
I mean, they finally decided that maybe they should book an actual good match for Mania.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they have AJ and Shinsuke.
Yeah, but
so maybe that'll be good.
Yeah.
But
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be good. But yeah, that Mania 23 was like not the tipping point, but like the petering off, where it's like I can watch other things now and I don't have to watch every single week because you get older with it, that kind of stuff. But
it's funny because I'm sure like people who were even older than us must think we're like crazy for even liking, but I don't think we were on like I said that I thought 03 and 04 were pretty, not that great, so I thought we were fair.
It's like every period has great stuff and bad stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not like a crazy thing. And, you know, Attitude Era, there's bad stuff and then there's great stuff.
Attitude Era has a lot more bad stuff than people.
There's great stuff too, okay? That's not shit on Attitude Era all the time.
Oh, I hate the Attitude Era.
Come on now. Give it a break.
I grew up with it, but it was so bad.
There's some good stuff. I mean, every era has its ups and downs, but you know, it's all a matter of what you remember, I think. And with me, I remember like so much random shit that it's all over the place. So I remember the good and the bad.
Yeah. But we should get into the questions then, I guess. We did get up some cool questions here. So let me bring them up. But yeah, I mean, it was a cool little period, I guess. It was very, very transitional. And I think it hadn't quite become, it was interesting because you could kind of feel the beginnings of like, we would call it the cardboard era starting here, mm-hmm. but like you still had enough like leftovers from, like pre-writers that you would still have guys who would just go out there and, you know, just do their own thing. Whereas nowadays, like, you know, who's left that goes out there? Like, you're basically talking like Jericho when he's there and like a few other people, but like back
probably
then,
Cena still writes his own stuff.
But like a lot of other people just like, you know, like a lot of people nowadays just, they grew up with this with all the, with an army of writers and everybody sounding the same. Mm-hmm. So everybody, you know, that's kind of why. But like back then, you had a lot of people that did sound the same, and you also had plenty of people that did. You know, JBL, for as much as you, whatever you can say about his in-ring, he sure didn't sound like everybody else.
No, he did not.
Okay, so let's see. Steve Castaneda.
Yep.
I think. He said, what is your all's favorite John Cena match in between 03 and 07? I really like the Cena-Shawn one-hour draw.
That's great. Yeah.
After the Raw after Mania, and the Cena, is this around the time when the fuck was that Cena and Umaga match?
That's my pick. The Last Man Standing match, or the
that was Royal Rumble 07, right?
Yeah.
Those two would basically be it, I think. And I think
those are.
You could also, if you want to go like a sleeper, I remember one of those Cena angle matches was really good. Maybe it was the one at actually don't remember which one though. I remember I thought one of them was really good.
Unforgiven and Survivor Series that year.
Maybe it was Unforgiven. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's probably one of the. You don't have to be sleeper here. It's those two matches. Those are my two favorite matches.
Those are great.
Joseph Bay, great dude. Got to see him in Japan the first time. What brand do you enjoy more and what period was your favorite during the stretch? He said he liked January through August 03 SmackDown, March through October 05 Raw, and the build to Mania for both brands was good stuff in 07. So we kind of covered this already, but we can sort of just like definitively say. So for me, I would say like, when we picked up in 03, I was more into, I'm probably more into SmackDown in 03. You get Angle and Brock, and Raw was pretty boring. 04, definitely more into Raw. Although as the year goes on, I'm really not into either one, honestly. Once like the Eugene stuff really becomes big and like Orton, Triple H. So first half of the 04, I'd say Raw. Second half of 04, neither. What do you think for 03 and 04?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to like, I don't really like break it down that much, to be honest with you. I just say like, I like SmackDown better than Raw because, you know, SmackDown had more guys that I liked, but
gotcha.
You know, but like, yeah, I think like the period of like late 03 to early 04 SmackDown, where you had like the Benoit like build and then the Eddie Guerrero build as well, mm-hmm. to win the belt and then sort of the changeover, Benoit goes to Raw. I like that period a lot. I also liked, like you said, the 07 run, the early 07 run to Mania.
Yeah.
Also pretty
like 05, I would say I was more into Raw. 06 too, probably, because 06 had, you know, I was kind of into the DX thing then, even though it looks pretty crappy in hindsight. Mm-hmm. And then 07, like Joey said, it was both were really good at leading in the Mania.
Yeah.
Okay. Lee Malone, another voice wrestling writer. What was Andrew's thoughts on Undertaker in late 03, mid 04? Was he a fan of late era Biker Taker? How do you feel about the Dead Man return? And was he familiar with the Dead Man character before his return?
Okay. Undertaker is my favorite wrestler of all time. Because he was a badass who beat up the bad guys. That was my, 10-year-old's reasoning for it. Late era Biker Taker, which was this Big Evil. He was sort of like the heel run from like, 02. So this is like late 03 where he's a face again. He was speaking with like Lesnar. I enjoyed it. I mean, I like Biker Taker. I mean, I like his entrance music a lot. So it's kind of the big selling point for me. But the Dead Man return, that was an interesting point because Kane had buried Undertaker alive at 03 Survivor Series. And it's like, oh, fuck, what now? What's going to happen now? It's like, did he just kill the Undertaker? Like, what's going to happen now? And then at the Rumble later that next year, the bell goes off. And the lights go out, and I didn't know what was happening. And then, Taz goes, that's the Undertaker's bell. And it's like, what? What is this? Who? Undertaker's bell. He rides a bike. He doesn't have a bell. What is this?
The bell was in one of the bikes.
It was, but not by the time I started watching.
I see. Yeah.
I started watching with boom, cha,
yeah.
Boom. Boom, dead. Well, I guess it's a
bell. Like the bell really was, I mean, the bell was really prominent in the original, like, American one, but it was less obvious, I guess.
It was less obvious. I didn't notice that. I was more focused on the, nice guys, it's that they always finish. I was more focused on that, but I was like confused, like, Undertaker, but he was buried alive.
Yeah.
And then they start running packages and like start talking about the Undertaker as being like the Dead Man, and they show clips of him like as that old persona, and they do like a countdown of like, 60 days to Mania, and it's all spooky and dark, and it's like there's like shots of Undertaker and like crosses and the moon and all that stuff.
And like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, it's like, okay. And you go online and to WWE.com and you see pictures, and it starts to click in the backstory of Undertaker. And
he came back
as like Mania 20 with the Druids and the hat and the duster. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. I like him. I still like him.
Yeah. Look, the late Undertaker stuff, I really, like, late Biker Taker, I was not into it at all. Mm-hmm. I thought the matches with Brock really weren't very good, 02 or 03. I liked heel Biker Taker. That was cool. But then when they quickly went back to babyface with the, obviously, anyone who knows me will probably not be shocked I wasn't that into the America kind of, like, face turn. It was like, okay. But that was the Dead Man return was cool though.
Yeah.
Didn't really have any problem with it. He didn't really become like a guy that I thought was awesome until he started having, awesome matches at Mania every year.
Yeah.
But like, because before this, like, his Mania matches were kind of shitty.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that would, like, there was like the handicap match with
A-Train and Big Show.
A-Train and Big Show. It was
supposed to be Taker and Nathan Jones.
Yeah. But like, they were like, oh, Nathan, you.
Nathan, like, this guy he's greener than goose shit. We cannot have him in a match. So they loved him up to a run-in. But,
The Flair match is good.
It's really good.
That has one of the greatest runs of all time.
Oh, Anderson with the spine buster out of nowhere. That's fucking, and he rolls out of the ring. Like, it's like nothing happened. It's so good. Yeah.
All right. So, August Baker, another VOW guy. He did ask, thoughts on Benoit? Do you have trouble revisiting the Ruthless Aggression era and his role in it? We already kind of answered this.
Yeah.
Like, you said you have no problem watching it. I do
watch it, but I understand why people don't.
Yeah, I don't. I can't do it, but it's totally, it's fine that you can. It's not I'm not a judgy person. Skylar has, he's at twitter.com. You need to tell me like how I should pronounce that Twitter handle.
Twitter. Twitter, yeah.
What main eventers from that era would not make the roster now? It's a two-part question. That's part one. Interesting. What main eventers from that era would not make the roster now?
I mean,
Mark Henry would have a hard time making it.
I think so.
They would be like, you're too fat, buddy, which is stupid considering he would go on to have one of the best of all time.
But heel runs, of a certain time period. Yeah,
I think he'd probably have trouble making it. They'd be like, buddy, why can't you do more squats or whatever?
Yeah, do more dives. Come on, man. Great Khali, maybe, because
Great Khali, they probably wouldn't bother. Because there's a working standard now.
The roster right now, I think, is as best as it's ever been in terms of like work rate and all that stuff. Yeah. But I think nowadays it's more focused on that than back then, which is more like spectacle and body guys and all that stuff.
I don't know if there's a lot of other guys though, because a lot of main events in this era were either already established guys. So
yeah, and yeah, most like main eventers back then are still main eventing now. I think with Triple H. Yeah. And Cena.
Big Show. Yeah. So, the second part of the question: what mid-card guys from right now would have been main eventers in that era? That's a better question. I've been trying to think of an answer for this, but I was like, I don't know that many WWE mid-carders. So, you know what? Luke Harper, maybe.
Perhaps,
he could have had like a, just because he's a taller guy, could have had like a little, like one of these little runs. Maybe not like a big headliner, but like a like a short little thing, but like he's like a Luther Reigns level or something. Well, I guess that's really a mid carder, so I don't know. Yeah. Who would have been like a? I'm trying to think. Do you know? Can you think of anybody? Because it's hard for me.
Hard to think too, because I have the roster here, and it's like, all right, he's too athletic. He's too good. It's like, it was a different mentality back then. Like you didn't have like the really excellent matches back like. That's just the way I see it, at least. But it's hard to answer that one. I think
I can think of more guys from who were mid carders then who could be main eventers now.
Absolutely,
like a Paul London maybe could have had like since they're fine with smaller guys, like a Brian Kendrick if he had come along with that, because he had some charisma too. He was just way too tiny for that period before like really they were letting a guy that size do main events. So like I don't know, there's a bunch of guys that could have done main events here.
Yeah.
So Chris at Funky Ass DG, which specific wrestler was the biggest missed opportunity of that period? This could be they just never lived up to their potential, got better elsewhere, whatever you want. I mean, the biggest answer as far as like never living up to the potential is Shelton Benjamin.
Yes.
Like he had so many chances and. He just like where it looked like he was gonna break through. He just never did. And, a part of that was booking too. I don't want to say it wasn't like they would book him to do something big, like have that classic he had with Shawn Michaels on Raw. That should have like been the springboard for his superstardom, and they just didn't go anywhere with it.
Right.
So I don't know. Like if you're there for too long, and he got Dolph Ziggler disease, right? Like once you're there. For like a period of years and without breaking out as a main eventer, that's it.
You just become a sludge,
So like Dolph Ziggler, same thing. Where it's like nowadays he could put on a fucking 5-star match and no one would care.
Yeah,
I mean not that I think Dolph Ziggler's putting on 5-star matches, but it's just hard to break through that sludge.
I remember being a really really big Mr. Kennedy fan at the time when he was like winning Money in the Bank. Yeah. I thought he could have been like a big guy, but
I really wasn't surprised
on his part. Like he made some mistakes, but I thought like he could have been like a thing.
I mean, he was supposed to be a thing. He was supposed to be Vince's kid.
Yeah, and he fucked that up. Right?
I don't know. Like, in hindsight, like I never thought. They always felt like he was something missing with him with me. So I don't know. He wasn't one that I would look at like that.
I just thought his finisher was amazing. The Green Bay Plunge, I thought, was like one of the coolest looking things I've ever seen.
Yeah. But, I'm going through the cards and seeing like who else. I mean, a lot of guys here did have like a run. I mean, Bobby Lashley, just because they pushed him so hard and his end was so abrupt. Like out of nowhere, he's gone. It was injury.
He's off TV and then he's gone.
Yeah. And it's like, it was very abrupt.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure that he was gonna work, but just the way he just abruptly just ended was very weird at the time. I don't know. There's not a ton of other guys though that jump out at me as like huge. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were mid carders that I guess Johnny Nitro was around this period and he kind of felt like he was gonna be a big deal and just That never happened.
I mean, they gave him the ECW belt because of the whole, you know, Benoit thing.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, that could have been like, that was with like the, like, all right, here you go. You're John Morrison now.
Yeah.
And he was like IC champion for a little bit and tag champion with Miz for forever. But yeah, he it's funny. If you would have asked me back then, like, okay, John Morrison or the Miz, who's going to be like still in the company now, WWE champion, multiple time champions all over, who's going to be that guy? I would have sworn it was going to be John Morrison, yeah. But it's the Miz. So funny things working.
How the fuck is this wrestling match still going on Raw? Like, seriously, it's 9:42 p.m. and they're
listen. Moving. I give them all the credit in the world for doing this. It's different. I like
that. We're gonna. Seriously, did Vince die? That's my question. But yeah, like this period, I don't know as far as other guys who like they really missed out on. It's not. I remember. You know who I remember liking a lot, and they never did anything with him. Elijah Burke.
Same.
He had a lot of charisma, and he like, you know, he wasn't like he was awful in the ring or anything. Certainly no worse than a lot of guys they pushed.
And when he went to TNA as D'Angelo De Niro, I remember liking him back then too.
Yeah, and then like, you know, not shocked TNA couldn't do anything with him because TNA couldn't do anything with anybody. Yeah. But yeah, but like I really thought he would have done something, but it never went anywhere. But yeah, I don't know. Like,
we could be here all day in terms of like, mid-carders. Day. Mid-carders we think should have gotten more. But
I remember, you know who they, I'm just scrolling through, you know who they definitely got every last drop out of? Deuce and Domino. They probably shouldn't even been on the fucking roster, so.
Yes. good old, supposed to catch Undertaker Mania, didn't Deuce.
Really? Wait, you're supposed to get Undertaker Mania?
No, catch
Taker
Mania.
Oh, I was like,
I didn't speak clearly enough. I'm sorry. It's my rambling bit, my rambling sense too. Yeah, he was the cameraman at Mania 25, who when Taker did the big dive, he was supposed to catch him, but like he sort of missed. So Taker like almost broke his neck. It was so scary.
That's good.
Yeah,
no, that's a good claim to fame.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just there, how many like shitty tag teams were there in WWE around this period?
Deuce and Domino, the Gemini, the Dicks,
Gemini, the Michelle McCool's students or whatever.
The teacher's pets, yeah. The pit bulls, the Highlanders.
Yeah, it's just like, this is a really, like a dead zone for WWE tag teams.
Yeah,
you basically had like two brands and they both had a tag title. So they always had a need for tag titles, but like they were so bad.
Paul Lund and Brian Kendrick were champions for like almost a year.
Yeah, that was like the one bright spot of the division, I think.
Yeah.
Like Lund and Kendrick, they were cool. But like, Jesus Christ, there's so many sort of tag teams.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, on that note, I guess we can wrap this up.
I suppose so. This was a fun romp through history and through nostalgia on my part. Yeah. This was my formative years as a wrestling fan. You did ask, you know, who wants to be on the show. I obliged. And I gave you this wonderful topic for the next, you know, 2 hours or so. But thank you, John, for having me on again. I always love being on the show.
Thank you for coming on, because I basically the I needed to record two episodes this week because I'm going to be in Spain in a few weeks. So everybody's getting this episode this week, and you're going to get the second episode we're recording, which I had plugged that already because I knew about that one already, was the e-wrestling one. You're going to have to wait a couple weeks for that.
Yes. So I was never an e-wrestling guy. I was more the simulator guy.
I was a huge e-wrestling person and simulator person.
Oh, yeah. Actually. I was always EWR and Promotion Wars. Those were my big two. But I was never an eFed guy.
I was a big eFed person, as you'll hear all about in like 2 weeks, actually.
Oh, good.
But the next episode is going to be an episode I'm going to be doing with a very close friend of mine named Mr. Brian Quinlan. I've like teased having him on a million times, but you know, he's pretty much the person I've gone to the most wrestling shows with through all these years. And he and I are going to talk, I guess, probably about some of the old Ring of Honor stories, because he was basically my traveling companion through all that. But the main reason why we're going to do this podcast is because he's coming to my house this weekend to watch New Japan and Ring of Honor in the War of the Worlds. So we're going to talk about Honor Rising. Yeah. Whatever the fuck it's called.
Whatever, everyone. Honor Rising, Global Wars.
War of the Worlds. Who fucking cares? Thank you for the correction.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for, correcting things.
But Honor Rising, we're going to talk both shows. She's going to be here anyway, so I figure we can just record it together. Maybe we'll talk some old Ring of Honor stories too. I figure, you know, since they're supposedly cross Ring of Honor shows. There's like five Ring of Honor guys on them, basically. But they're supposedly crossover Ring of Honor shows. So can talk a little Ring of Honor history too. But yeah, the main topic will be those two shows. So
cool.
That'll be this weekend. And awesome. Yeah, that's the next episode. Why don't you plug what's going on with Music of the Mat?
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich, exactly as it's spelled, AndrewTrich. You can follow my podcast, Music of the Mat. It's a wrestling music podcast at Music of the Mat. The most recent episode that I just did, it'll be out by the time this episode comes out, is about a selection of themes from Progress Wrestling and its history over the past few years. And I've got on a wonderful guest co-host for that named Duncan Joyce. He's a great guy, lives in the UK. And we talked about, Progress and its themes for an hour and a half. And check that out. VoicesOfWrestling.com for Music of the Mat and also my articles.
And Wrestling Omakase and Open the Voice Gate, the podcast that technically does still exist, even though I think we've gone like 2 months without recording now. But there you go. Andrew.
I'm here.
Oh, sorry. I thought you went dead or something.
No, absolutely.
All right. So with that, folks, we will see you on the next Wrestling Omakase on New Japan and Ring of Honor. And of course, you can always follow us on Twitter at Wrestle Omakase, not wrestling, as Wrestle Omakase. And you can find us on iTunes as well. If you search for Wrestling Omakase, you'll find us. All right, folks. Thank you again, Andrew, for coming on.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, as always, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.